welcome to the Camp Constitution Report and Camp Constitution Radio. The report's heard on, of course, Catching Fire News. And if you're watching this and you're not signed up, please do so and share not just this program, but we have some great hosts as well, other hosts other than me, and definitely worth your time, investment in time. And also, you can hear this on WBCQ The Planet every Monday and Thursday evening, 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And before I introduce our guests, I just want to make a comment on this so-called codifying of same-sex marriage. The U.S. Constitution does not give a grant of power to Congress or to the executive branch or even to the Supreme Court concerning marriage. So it will most likely, we know Biden's going to sign it. He's a big supporter of this, anything that will destroy Western civilization. I guess he's in favor of it. I think there were 12 Republicans that signed on. Mitt Romney, of course, almost always expecting Mitt Romney to do something like that. When he was governor of Massachusetts, he was a big supporter of that agenda as well, even though he said that he's an old-fashioned guy and he believes marriage should be male and female. But as soon as he became governor, that went out the window. So it should be challenged. And again, the federal government has no business dealing with marriage. And there's never been a grant of power. And hopefully there'll be enough justices to know their constitution. Well, this show, the whole reason why this station was, or this format was produced, was obviously to educate people, but also give success stories, people getting actively involved at local levels, because that's how we're going to take this country back. As much as I detested him, the late Tip O'Neill said all politics is local, and that's very true. So our next guest has become a good friend of mine. He's lived out right down the road from me. Is Reverend Paul Terry. He is he just won re-election to the New Hampshire State House, and so Reverend Paul, thanks for coming on.
Nice to be here, Hal. And I believe I live not only a bit down the road from you, but I'm a little lower than you. And so I might say I've come to not only consider you a friend, but I look up to you.
Ah, yes, especially when we still have snow in the ground where most of it's melted down. You're down in the valley, right?
Right.
But I have, first off, tell the listeners and viewers a little bit about your background. And then the second thing is that what motivated you to run for office? Because after all, you're a reverend. You're not supposed to get involved in politics. Isn't that what we're told? That's not. You should just pray, you know, not get involved.
So I grew up on Eastern Long Island, New York State, and graduated from the local high school, and went on to college in upstate New York, where I received a Bachelor of Arts degree, and with my major being economics, and received an honorary degree or honors because of my my undergraduate thesis. I thought I was going to go into politics at that point, but God had other plans for me, and I ended up going on to seminary. I received a Master of Divinity degree from Gordon Conwell Theological Seminary in 1975. And yes, that's right, 1975. And served churches in upstate New York and Connecticut and Rhode Island for the next approximately 39 years. Always had a keen interest in politics along the way. And by the way, while I was in seminary, I met my very, and married my very excellent wife, Priscilla. We have three grown children and five grandchildren. And when we get to see them, they're an absolute delight. So when I retired from active service to a congregation, because when you're a pastor, you don't retire.
No such thing as retiring.
You're under God's rule forever, Al. So when I have to phrase this correctly, when I'm around with people, are you no longer a pastor? Well, I'm a pastor. I'm always God's man. He called me to be pastor, and I'm always a pastor. As a matter of fact, I'm a pastor at the State House now, in my role as a state representative, not officially, but that's where God has me serving now, and I've had some really interesting opportunities while I've been a state representative to to represent my Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. My wife and I moved to New Hampshire shortly after I retired from active service in the ministry while I was at a church in Rhode Island. God essentially said to me, and I say this tongue in cheek, okay, I told you where to go for the first 39 years, where would you like to go? And I said, well, Priscilla and I would really love to go to New Hampshire because we fell in love with this state a number of years ago and made frequent trips to New Hampshire while my second son was an undergraduate at Dartmouth up in Hanover. So we came here in 2017. God led us to a house that was on the market here in Alton in 2018, and we've been here ever since.
Well, I'm glad you're up here, and we moved up here in December of 2020, and as a matter of fact, I think it when my son and one of my girls were sort of homesteading before we moved in completely, your wife was nice enough to bring a meal over. I think that time we lost power here too. We had a terrible snowstorm. So now we just had an election, and the pundits, whom should never be allowed to be on any major network, they were saying we're going to have a red wave. Newt Gingrich, he was on all the Newsmax and Fox News. Well, I predict 40, a swing of 40. There'll be 40 people, new state. We'll have a House, a U.S. House of plus 40 Republicans, and we'll probably have a like 5 to 10. And then he was totally wrong. And then he's still on. Now he's assessing what went wrong. Well, maybe if you didn't open your big mouth and got all these people to just sit on the law, we're going to win. Don't worry about it. But we have some mixed results. It's interesting that Republicans lost in some places, gained in others. Florida was a major victory. I mean, that was, Florida used to be a swing state. I mean, I think the governor DeSantis won by like over 1 million votes. Miami-Dade won big time, Brad. Even your old stomping grounds of Long Island.
The Republicans swept all four seats on Long Island. Now remember, Long Island is actually partly New York City, but the two suburban counties of Nassau and Suffolk elected four out of four representatives to Congress in Washington, and made gains in upstate New York as well. You don't go entirely blue until you hit New England, and New England's a solid blue. But who would have ever thought, Al? You get to New York and you've got large swaths of red.
That's right.
And if it were not for New York and California, the seats that Republicans won, particularly in Southern California, we would not have that majority right now of 219 or 220, whatever it is at this hour.
Well, it's interesting too, New York State, if you took out, we used to look at Long Island and New York City, and then you look at Albany, Syracuse, Buffalo, and Rochester, but the rest of the New York is pretty conservative. There's a lot of upstate rural, and if you look at a map, you'll see red everywhere except in the large population areas. Here in New Hampshire, this is what really is interesting about our election. You would think a Republican governor, he's a rhino. He's not as bad as Charlie Baker, let's put it this way. But I think if Chris Sununu was a resident of Massachusetts, he probably would be as bad as, because he can get away with it. We lost the three federal elections, the two members of the House of Representatives. Both lefty Democrats were reelected. And Maggie Hassan, who votes for 87,000 new agents, IRS agents, votes completely in lockstep with Chuck Schumer. She won. It wasn't, she didn't win by a landslide. It was relatively close. I think that if we didn't have all these college students voting, New Hampshire would be a whole lot redder. But it's interesting. I voted for 11 people. Two of them were uncontested. I think it was the sheriff and it was another position. But out of those, 9 got elected. I said, that's the best I've ever done in my life, living in Boston. I used to vote for a Democrat, Dapper O'Neill, not Tip O'Neill, but Dapper O'Neill as a Democrat, and he would win. Sometimes I get a question on a ballot question right, but for the most part, I never I was a faithful voter, but almost never would I get a, I would elect anybody that would win. So I'm somewhat disappointed. At the same time, look what happened in Florida. Look what happened in Georgia. Georgia was a very close gubernatorial, and that obnoxious Stacey Abrams. How can anybody vote for that woman? And she almost won, what, 4 years ago? And this time she was pretty beaten pretty badly. I think it was like 58-40 or something like that. It was pretty decisive.
Well, I think that we're still in the early stages of post-election analysis. And there's a lot of research yet to be done on what happened and why it happened in the wares of the election across the country. But I would say the most surprising feature of this election locally was the prediction of the polls, and I have in view particularly the St. Anselm poll, which has been relatively accurate and therefore well respected over the years. The St. Anselm's poll suggested that we were actually going to elect Caroline Leavitt here in Congressional District 1, and that Don Bolduc was very close to winning. It was within the margin of error, but he was up over Maggie Hassan. And over in Congressional District 2, candidate over there in the district which was tilted more heavily in favor of the Democrats after redistricting this year, he actually was very close and neck and neck with Annie Custer, and the polls were off, and I think that not only nationally but here in New Hampshire we saw that same phenomenon, which is very unusual. Remember, Trump was going to be slaughtered by Hillary Clinton in 2016?
Oh, yes.
So as Republicans, we're used to the polls underestimating Republican strength on Election Day. And I put that in quotes because now we've got election week and election month going on, depending on the state. So I think the expectations were rather high, and Newt Gingrich, of course, got caught up in that, along with a lot of other Republican luminaries. And so when that was not, those great gains were not achieved, the media actually spun the election results as almost as a loss for the Republicans. And this gets really interesting when you think about all of the different factors that go into contributing to an election, and it's more than just the numbers. On the granular level, I'm going to be really interested to see what percentage of registered Republicans came out to vote here in New Hampshire, what percentage of the independents came out to vote, and what percentage of registered Democrats came out to vote. Was there really a large number of Republicans who just decided to stay home because they figured that there was going to be a red wave? We don't know this yet, and it'll be a while before we do, because we're going to actually have to compare the voter rolls, the record of voters on Election Day, with the actual registration rolls from the different towns and cities. But picking up the House of Representatives was huge in Washington, and right now, Hal, we appear to be to the slenderest of margin here in New Hampshire in the House where I'm a member. Last I heard, it was 201 to 199.
Well, out of 400, yes,
that's. Out of 400.
I think what was it, 25 seats in 2020 that we flipped the 25 seats, so we had a 25 seat majority of the Republicans.
Well, we started out with 218, as I recall, and now we're down to 201. So, I mean, that's a net loss of 17 seats.
17, yeah.
Between 2020 and 2022, And quite frankly, my colleagues and those in leadership were really talking up us with a super majority, because we believed that we had had a really good 2 years and really delivered for the people of New Hampshire. Now, I have heard one piece of data that's a bit troubling, and that is that, and maybe you've heard it as well, Hal, and that is that unmarried women came out in significantly higher numbers than was forecast by most of the pollsters. And so the suggestion when you start talking about unmarried women is that perhaps the abortion issue and the scare tactics that were employed by Maggie Hassan, particularly and the Democrats, may have worked with that demographic. We know that we passed the Fetal Life Protection Act here into law last year here in New Hampshire. But essentially, the Fetal Life Protection Act closely mirrors the Roe v. Wade decision, because we provided protections for unborn children, but only after the first 16 weeks. So, you know, that's third trimester. The emotion and the distortion, which you're going to get in any kind of campaign, may have really proved to be the factor as to why we suffered the losses that we did.
Interesting that the national narrative is that this extremism has been rejected. But all of these elections, I've never seen things so close in my life. There's some cases where it's 60-40, but I've seen where just a handful of votes, and even here in New Hampshire, now you won by a very large margin. You and in New Hampshire, in this particular district, there's three Republicans and three Democrats, and you won very comfortably in spite of, the left has spent so much money. I think Stacey Abrams, $100 million for a gubernatorial campaign?
And well, the figure that I heard, Al, was that Maggie Hassan spent $38 million to $2 million for Don Bolin.
And you think
I would have had a few more dollars if Mitch McConnell hadn't pulled the rug out from under him and a lot of other Republican conservative senatorial candidates, such as Blake Masters out in Arizona, Laxalt in Nevada. Mitch could care less about being the majority leader. He wants to be, he enjoys being the minority leader. And for heaven's sakes, Mitch McConnell certainly does not want to lose his leadership position because a few more conservatives were elected to the United States Senate on the Republican side. It's just deeply, deeply distressing and to the point of disgust.
Well, even in the primary, you think in a primary, the word of mouth is that the Republican Party does not, it just sits back and waits for the results. But they spent, McConnell spent, what, $5 million attacking Don Bolduc in the primary, and he won anyway. And then they spent a lot of money going after Leavitt, the woman, the young 25-year-old lady who won the primary. And so the Republicans are doing all this infighting, the neocons or the lefty Republicans doing it. And so that's, I think, it was a tragedy right there. But I think
I think what we're talking about here is what some people would call a circular firing squad. But that's because there's such diversity within the Republican Party. You just don't find this within the Democrat Party. I mean, they purged any dissidents, real dissidents from the Democrat Party, at least those to the right, a number of years ago, when they got rid of anybody that was pro-life. Just goodbye. So we've got this diversity within the Republican Party, and so it looks to some people like we just line up in a big circle, face inward, start shooting at each other. There are two real significant factions within the Republican Party. And the divide comes on social issues, so that whereas most Republicans will agree on fiscal issues, you have a great divide, and it's over social issues. This got so bad back in the 1960s in New York State when I was still high school, college, that a number of the conservatives broke away from the Republican Party and founded the Conservative Party in New York. And there are Republicans who cannot win in New York unless they receive the cross endorsement from the Conservative Party. Now, for people who live in New Hampshire, and I presume people live in Massachusetts and a number of other states, they're scratching their heads right now, because what they're hearing and what they are hearing is that in New York State there's actually a third party, and there's actually a fourth party, and then there are even other parties such as the Working Families parties. But in New York you've got the Republican Party, the Democrat Party, and it's the Democrat Party, by the way, folks. It's not the Democratic Party. I'm so annoyed when I hear this. It's the Democrat Party, and there isn't a whole lot Democratic about the Democrat Party, by the way. And then you have the Conservative Party and the Liberal Party, and they get, depending on who wins for governor and what the votes are for the gubernatorial candidates, that's the line that they get on the ballot in New York. And so row A right now would be Democrat, row B would be Republican, row C would be Conservative, and row D would be Liberal. And cross endorsements of candidates are permitted. I've actually had conversations with colleagues here in New Hampshire who are so discouraged with the way that conservatives have been treated in a number of places in a number of ways, that I've just shared that story from my background and suggested that, you know, there may come a time when we have to think about forming another party. And that doesn't mean that we can't cross-endorse candidates if permitted by law. But conservatives are very disorganized in this state. And it's really to the detriment of those of us who are not only fiscal conservatives, but also what people would call social conservatives.
Well, here in Belknap County, we had an organization, a political action committee called Citizens for Belknap County.
Yeah.
And there was an Achilles heel. It was a county-owned resort, ski resort, Gunstock. And there's been some you and some others said, hey, we need accountability here, and got people kind of upset. So these leftists came in, armed with lots of money, and started really a smear campaign against you, a personal campaign. You were a secessionist. I'm surprised they didn't call you Paul Robert E. Lee Terry or something like that, or Stonewall Terry, you know. but in spite of all, and they seem to have plenty of money. They put ads in newspapers. I mean, there's a few weeklies here and a daily in Laconia, which is the only city. But even after all the money they spent and the signs popped everywhere, they didn't do so well. They only gathered a few seats.
Well, in the general, Hal, this so-called bipartisan, nonpartisan, bipartisan group, PAC, they endorsed 17 Democrats, and they endorsed 9 Republicans. Now, I have a friend who parses the Republican endorsements into rhinos and real Republicans, and so he actually, I think I shared this sign with you, that 17 Democrats, 8 rhinos and 1 Republican. Well, let's just put that aside for the moment. But 17-9 is not what I would call bipartisan or nonpartisan. Now, the Democrats would love to call that bipartisan because they have 17 out of 26. That's their definition of bipartisan. But that's heavily weighted in favor of the Democrats. And yet, you're correct the results of the election. If you look at the state reps and the state senator races that involved Belknap County, the number was 25. And Republicans, whether you want to call them conservatives and rhinos or just Republicans, the fact of the matter is that group that ran on the Republican line, 22 were successful. 22 out of 25. It would have probably been 23 if not for a write-in campaign of a Republican in Meredith. That would have been 23. And then the other two Democrats that won had served in the past, at least one of them has, out of the city of Laconia. And so what happened here is that 2020 was kind of an anomaly because it was a complete sweep. All the reps, all the senators, senators in Belknap County. And this time, the way I put it with folks is that we've kind of reverted to the mean. If those who are listening and watching maybe remember their arithmetic in school, and the mean is not an average, it's closer to the median. I can't even remember what mean is, but the norm, closer to the norm. So we didn't suffer staggering losses here, and we did not suffer staggering losses in the general as a result of the work of the Citizens for Belknap group that received outside funding in significant amounts from leftists and leftist groups who targeted Belknap County because it has been the strongest Republican county in New Hampshire. So, you know, why chip around the edges? What they did is they went right for the heart of the strength of the Republican Party here in New Hampshire, and they went right for us. But 22 out of 25 is what we ended up with. The real damage, Hal, came in the primary. Mm-hmm. The primary is where we lost a number of really fine conservative Republican representatives. That's where the gun stock offensive on the part of Citizens for Belknap took the highest or the greater toll.
And I imagine there's groups like the Soros-type groups like Belknap, Citizens for Belknap, all over the country. And I know there's an old saying, I don't know who originated it, but it goes something like, an ounce of truth is worth a ton of lies. And we just have to be out there exclaiming, proclaiming the truth. And, you know, I think somebody went up to you and said, one of the Belknap citizens for Belknap County, he said that we're going to start a campaign against you tomorrow, you know, like a day after the election. And I think we should look at 2022 right now, not sit around for 6 months. And I think we have to find candidates. First, we can't be discouraged because that's the best weapon they have is for us just to be discouraged. Oh, it's too late. Let them be discouraged.
The problem with Republicans historically is that they have treated politics almost like a hobby. Mm. And Democrats have treated it like religious fundamentalists.
Exactly. You're right. Yeah, it's not.
They eat, sleep, and drink it. They put Republicans to shame because they take it as seriously as they do. And the reason that Republicans lose as often as they do is because Republicans are not as serious about winning as Democrats are.
That's true. That's right.
And then Republicans do not drive their base because they're not working hard enough to drive their base to the polls and to vote absentee or mail-in or whatever. And by the way, Florida ended up as strongly Republican as it did. And I read a very interesting fact that the Democrats did not win a statewide office in the state of Florida for the first time since the 1870s.
Wow, that's amazing. That's amazing.
And they did a great job there. The legislature and Governor DeSantis did a great job of tightening up the electoral process, not excluding or folks or suppressing the vote, but working to ensure that people who voted were actually people who were eligible to vote.
That's right.
In a lot of other states, and even here in New Hampshire, the exceptions are so large. I mean, you can drive a truck through them.
Well, we have about a minute left. What some words of advice you can give people around the country who might be a little discouraged, maybe encouraged? What would you do? And I would suggest that consider running for office. I know you came up to me back in June of this year, and your wife came up to me and a whole bunch of others. So you should run for county commissioner. I had no intention whatsoever of running in this soon living up here, but I did. And now I've been asked to run for a town selectman, which I'm putting in a prayer. But I think we have a duty. If I want to live in a town or a county that's run properly, I can't just hope that the right people will come. So what advice do you have?
Those of you and viewers may share the faith that we do, Hal. I would just urge anyone who professes to be a Christian to consider seriously how important it is that we step up as citizens and we get out there in the public square, and that we make our voices known. We do it very civilly, we do it courteously, but we do it strongly. The advice I would give, nothing ventured, nothing gained. And if you don't play, you have no right to complain. Somebody said, if we had more Christians come out and vote, Hal, we would have had far better results this past election day. And I just have to exhort those of the Judeo-Christian heritage and tradition and beliefs. Get going, folks, because we're losing this country unless we get involved.
And if people want to contact you, the website there is from your campaign. They can see it right there. Okay.
Absolutely.
We have to go. We're running out of time. I want to thank all of you for listening and or viewing. You've been listening to Camp Constitution Radio and the Camp Constitution Report on catchingfire.news. And until next week, may God richly bless you.
Thanks, Hal. Bye.